Action Committee say most of those trapped are women and children. The Syrian National Coalition has appealed to the United Nations to pressure President Bashar al-Assad to allow those trapped to escape. The United Nations is also concerned about civilian safety. UN Emergency Relief Coordinator Valerie Amos has called on all parties to allow safe passage for the approximately 2,500 people trapped in homes and to provide a pathway for humanitarian aid to enter the city. In Zimbabwe, two-day early voting began yesterday, but thousands of people weren't able to vote because polling stations didn't have enough ballots. FSRN's Girikai Chaunza is in the capital, Harare, and is monitoring the special early voting, during which security forces scheduled for duty on Election Day are allowed to cast their ballot.
Early voting ends today amid concerns that thousands might lose out on voting because of the snail's pace of the process. On Sunday, angry members of the security forces at one polling station in Harare smashed windows in an electoral stampede. The frustrated voters would not respond to FSRN's questions because they are not allowed to talk to the media without permission from their superiors. The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission is on record saying they are ready for the national election due on July 31st, but they admitted having failed to prepare for the special ballot. Joyce Letitia Kazembe is the ZEC deputy chairperson.
I wish to advise that the printing of ballot papers...
And hello. If you've just joined us, please stay tuned for our regularly scheduled program of Indigenous Talk Radio with the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
And I guess war's okay, it's just a little inconvenient, but it's better than a video game and it's better than the movies, the American way, the new world order. Hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, this is evident. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just, because I want.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
As promised, we go back to the phones. Rush Limbaugh, talent on loan from God. This is Alan in Seymour, Indiana. Welcome, sir. It's a delight to have you with us. Hi.
Oh, love you, Rush. Been listening to you forever. But I watched Gentile, and she explained that as a white man, I can use the word nigga, and I didn't know that, but then I got to thinking about it. When they asked Paula Deen, they didn't ask her which word she used. They asked her if she used the N-word. So all these people may owe Paula an apology because she might not have said anything that was bad after all.
Let me help out here. No matter what you heard Rachel Gentile say, and no matter how you translated it, I would strongly advise you not to try it on the street. I wouldn't put this to the test anywhere. I wouldn't go out there and utter the word N-I-G-G-A to see what happens and then say, hey, it just means a guy. And then they say, who told you that? Rachel Gentile. I wouldn't try this.
Well, that sounds like good advice.
But I can see where you would interpret it. It's what she did say. I mean, she did say that, that because she was asked point blank by Piers Morgan. Is that racial? No, man. No, it means a guy. It means a male. It means police. And by the way, this is 2013. And I don't know how many know the definition has changed the way Rachel Gentile said so. And it's still a word that I think actually can only be used by certain people. I wouldn't try it. I know that it would appear that you could say whatever you wanted to say now, but you can't. Because it's not about that. So just trying to be helpful here, Alan.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for Indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! Indian land! You guys have no jurisdiction here.
Indian land! You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you see? Where is your history? How did the man wipe out your history? How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. White man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
All the yellow niggas, right? Look, man, I am tired of that. I am not passing. I am black. Do you hear me, man? Do you understand? I am black. I'm a nigga. Do you understand me? I was born black. I live black. And I'm gonna die probably because I'm black. Because some cracker that knows I'm black better than you, nigga, is probably gonna put a bullet in the back of my head.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginal.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian. Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalpressnews.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. Thank you for tuning in to Indigenous News, thought and analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, neo-fascist, and neo-misogynist control. I wish to welcome you all to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along, welcome along. I wish peace to the gods and earths and love and solidarity to the original family in this time of strife and struggle. This is the Angry Indian. And I'm in the studio again with our executive producer and engineer, as always, Guadalupe Morales. And we're seeing the fallout behind the Trayvon Martin what's really being known, at least on the internet, as the Zimmerman verdict. I suppose this is how it's going to go down in history, as the Zimmerman verdict. Because really, when you really look at it objectively, it makes sense to call it the Zimmerman verdict, because Trayvon Martin was the one that was on trial. You know, does anybody out there disagree with me on that? I mean, really, does anybody disagree with that? You know, tell us, aboriginalradio@lavabit.com. You know, let us know. Or even leave us a voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk. You know, you got about 10 minutes there, but you don't have to take that long, you know. But, yeah, you know, tell us what you think. If you think it makes sense to say that, that my analysis on this is off the mark. That really, it's fair to call it the Zimmerman verdict, because really, it was Trayvon Martin that was on trial. Let's, like I said the last show, you know, there's a lot of suckers, you know, who call themselves left wing. Some of them, you know. Or at least they're using the anarchist, communist star, you know, where, you know, one side of the star is red, the other side is black, what have you. Libertarian, I suppose that's what it is, really. And they got that confused with something they heard from Noam Chomsky, in a talk of his or a documentary or something. So they think they know what they're doing. They think they know what they're talking about. Well, I know that they think they know what they're talking about, because just like most conservatives, they're so goddamn arrogant. You know, they really feel that they are the smartest sons of bitches in the room. And they talk to everybody like they're stupid, and how they're going out of their way, you know, they have to step out of some sort of, or they have to step down, I suppose, really. Right? You know, that they're stepping down somehow when, you know, just to speak to you at all. You know, I mean, they really carry themselves in their minds anyway, as if they're royalty, when really they're nobody. You know, and this is what I get out of Alex Jones. You know, he really cannot stand the kingdom. You know, he has a problem with you know, government. He has a problem with the social current, you know, in the United States. He has a problem with everything that goes on in the U.S., you know, he's just one of these folks with an attitude, like most of these libertarians, like a hell of a lot of Republicans, but mostly libertarians in terms of this particular angle that I'm talking about. You know, they want to be king, they can't be king, so they decide, well, I'm going to be against the monarchy, because I'm one of the smart guys, I should be king. Those of you on the far right, or those of you who are smart enough to study the far right, so you understand what it is that you're dealing with, you might have heard of this nonsense text called Imperium. It's a really early neoliberal take to me on Spengler, but you can look it up. Francis Parker Yockey, right? You know, one of the things about him and the nutcase that wrote the Turner Diaries, William Pierce, you know, they just have this attitude. You know, Ted Kaczynski, for that matter, too, and Anders goddamn Breivik. I mean, we've written about this, of Caucasians, Christians, and desperate white men. The ebook is out there. Go get it. You know, it's out there. It's on the sites now. It's on my personal site, aboriginalwriter@wordpress.com. You know, go cop that. And actually, the entire thing was printed out at Occupied Palestine. So you can check that out too at occupiedpalestine.wordpress.com. And it's been republished a few places. Yeah, you can find it. Of Christians, of Caucasians, Christians, and desperate white men. Where I was looking at Anders Breivik. And, you know, it's really clear that he and Erich Rudolph and all of these freaks that are on the far right, they carry themselves off as if every time they speak to what they consider to be their lesser fellow citizens, if they even consider you to be a citizen. Because, you know, I mean, they question whether or not Barack Obama is born in the United States. He was born in Hawaii, you know, but that doesn't matter. And was it like Aldi Tates? Lupe, where's she from, Aldi Tates? I can't peg her accent. You know, I just don't. The name, I know it's Eastern something. Well, you know, regardless of where she's from, she's not even, was she a naturalized? Is she even a citizen? She has to be, I suppose. She's, you know, pumping that nonsense. But, you know, she was always, filing a court case, trying to prove that he wasn't really born here, or trying to at least get people all confused, which I think was the real goal, you know, questioning his place of birth. She's not even from the goddamn United States, you know? She's not from the U.S. herself. You know, she is a quote-unquote foreigner. You know, that's how she was, you know, referring to him. What are you talking about? You're a goddamn foreigner. You know, it's like, you know, what the hell is this? You know, like I said, you know, with conservatives, if you accuse them of racism, you know, which is what they do, then they accuse you of being a racist. Because they don't know what else to do. So, you know, they just figure, okay, well, we'll just fight fire with fire. They accuse us of racism, we accuse them of racism. If, you know, they say that we hate black people, well, we say, well, you hate white people. And, you know, just like a, you know, schoolyard, you know, argument, it just goes back and forth, it goes back and forth. And that is the intent, brothers and sisters. So, you know, what I'm trying to say is, let's not get caught up in a lot of this. You know, let's not get caught up in the usual cliches. Because when we do that, we end up really going nowhere. We think we're doing something, but really we're not doing a goddamn thing. We know we're standing there, and we're shouting, and we're marching, what have you. You know, all of that. And we're saying all of the regurgitated things, you know, we're all brothers, we're all American, you know, all of that. And in the meantime, you have a decision like this in the Zimmerman verdict. And you have Jimmy Carter, of all people. President Jimmy Carter, of all goddamn people, from the Carter Center now, of all people, who says we need to just calm down and accept the verdict. Now, you already know, without me getting into it, which I'm going to anyway, you know, there's a lot of folks, man, you know, just spreading a lot of, you know, hateful hubris, you know, on the streets, you know, in discussions, you know, between friends. I mean, because of the Zimmerman verdict, a lot of people, a lot of friendships have ended. You know, a lot of my white neighbors have avoided me, you know, and I'm not going to do anything but what I usually do. Good morning, good afternoon, what have you. But, you know, I just suppose that they didn't know what to say to me. And, you know, those who, you know, let's just put it this way, was sensitive, not just to the concerns of you know, the case and what happened with Trayvon Martin, was sensitive to my feelings. Were like, well, look, you know, I'm really sorry that this happened, and it's an injustice, and we really need to, you know, move on. And I appreciated that. And for those brothers and sisters that did get those sorts of, you know, that kind of, you know, thoughtful condolence, I suppose, you know, for what really was not, you know, just a loss of justice in the case, you know, for this young man, but a perpetuation of 500 plus years of hate against Africans, against the Native Americans, those who speak English and those who speak Spanish. You dig what I'm saying? And, you know, we really need to really check ourselves. Doesn't mean, you know, to be, you know, self-criticism is goddamn important. And I know a lot of folks have a hard time with that, and I know a lot of people in the African community have a hard time with that, you know, especially if they've sold a couple of books, or, you know, they've been on TV once or twice or something, or they've been to some dinner, or they won an award or some kind of recognition from the Europocentric mainstream. You know, when it comes to that, it really gets hard to deal with folks. So, you know, to say anything that goes against what they believe, not what they actually know or can, even sometimes even fucking articulate, which is really goddamn annoying to me. But, you know, on the strength, man, you know, it's like on Twitter, there was a couple of, I mean, again, I'm not going to name anybody because I don't believe in calling people out, you know, because of these tiffs. You can go on my timeline on Twitter and check it out for yourself. The Angry Indian, one word, at Twitter. And, you know, I hate to say it like this, because this is what it is, and this is going to be the subject of the next dispatch, man, because I don't know what it is with a lot of sisters that are online, and like I said, you know, I don't know what it is, especially those who want to, you know, comment on social issues and what have you. And again, you know, they're living the Huxtable fantasy, the majority of them. Or Shonda Rhimes. I mean, you know, whatever it is, you know, what I'm calling now the white hat theory of black female life in America. That they can live these fantasies they're watching on Scandal and Deception and whatever the hell Oprah Winfrey is trying to push at any given moment, you know, like the butler. I can't remember the actor's name. And, you know, I will try to look for it during the break if Lupe can pull it up from my screen here. Dad, I mean, I've seen the brother in some things before. I recognize his face, but, you know, just like a lot of character actors, you don't know their names. And brother said that he was offered the, he's a red bone, you know. He's gotten darker over time, you dig? You know, like most of us do. But, you know, he's a red bone. And they had initially approached him for the butler. Now, I forgot where I read this. It might have been Color Lines. You can go check there. Or it might have been the Griot, you know, which I don't really recommend most of the time because I don't like a lot of what I see there. But, you know, they might have had it. Actually, no, because I don't think they would have actually had the chutzpah to put it up. So I would suggest to go look at Color Lines. But in any case, he says that he was off at the script, you know. And when he read it, he said he just couldn't do it. He said he just couldn't do it. He said it looked to him like historical pornography. And he said he just couldn't do it. And Forrest Whitaker, I mean, you know, I got no beef with Forrest Whitaker. You know, I've seen some of his straight to the video store films as of late, you know. We have a PSA with him here from Peter, which has gotten us quite a bit of flack, you know. Not because it's Forrest Whitaker, but because it's from Peter, dude. And, you know, I got no beef with the brother, man, you know. I mean, he just got racially profiled not too fucking long ago, right? Forrest Whitaker, you know, I mean, how the hell would you not know who the hell he is? But, you know, one nigga just looks like another nigga, right? So it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, you know, I mean, he's fan. But he took the role. Now, I haven't seen it yet, you know, but it just has that aroma already from what I've read and from what I've heard about it. And I believe Glenn Ford, I heard him say something about it. And perhaps Uhura Radio, they said something about it. Or somebody on their network said something about it. You know, this idea that the butler, this black butler who served all of these white presidents, that somehow he got them to open up to the idea that black people were really human. So instead of making a film about William Monroe Trotter, who got into nearly a fist fight with Woodrow Wilson, they had to be separated. I don't know how many of you know that. They had to be separated in the White House because, you know, Woodrow Wilson, the university president over there, what was it, Princeton? It's Princeton, right? I know it's Jersey, Princeton, whatever. And, you know, Democrat, right? You know, this is before the Democrat, you know, a fury of you know, whites, this is before the Democratic theory of white Anglo, you know, Saxon supremacy in North America, you know, slid over to the Republican Party after 1964. See, you got to remember that because some GOP, you know, person will listen to this and say, oh, see, Democrat. Oh, nah, man, you know what the hell is going on. 1964 was the splitting and the transversions of waters, okay? All of those bigots that you like to point out that founded the Ku Klux Klan and what have you, you're right. And they slid right over to the Republican Party and have stayed there ever since. And a lot of those people who actually did have respect for African people slid over to the Democratic Party. Read your history and stop reading, you know, propaganda. Or stop, you know, just listening to Glenn Beck. You know, or Sean Hannity and his friend, Hal Turner. And don't let anybody tell you that Hal Turner and Sean Hannity are not homeboys, because Hal Turner said that they are goddamn friends. And you know, Hal Turner, the white supremacist, you know, Hal Turner, the white supremacist snitch. Yeah, that Hal Turner. Yeah. Yeah, that Hal Turner. You know, I mean, you know, he's just one of the people, like Ron Paul, you know, who just, you know, laid the groundwork for what we saw in Florida here with the Zimmerman verdict. Yeah, I know I went on a tangent, you know. So really, you know, to get back to what I was originally talking about, you know, there's folks on Twitter that if you say anything that they perceive as being negative. Now, again, as I say, as they perceive as being negative about one of their, you know, talented 10th heroes. You know, one of these mainstream, you know, Negroes. They, you know, they automatically catch an attitude. And I mean it just like that. They catch an attitude. Now, some of you remember a piece I wrote some time back about a tiff I got into with Cola Booth. You know, and she really, you know, her and her C. Ali. I'm naming them because I've already written about them. Now, Ali, you know, we've never gotten into any sort of thing. We've never had any contact. But Cola Booth, I don't know what happened. She just decided to jump into a conversation I was having, or she responded to something I posted. And then she just went on this tear about how, you know, American blacks were pretty much useless and Europeans always would be better than African men, or something to that effect. And then when she found out that I was Native, then she got into this, you know, that I belonged to, that I was a member of a disappeared and greasy race. And, you know, it was just, I'm not even going to say it was negative. It was just, you know, ridiculously fucking bigoted. And this is coming from, you know, Cola Booth, right? He's supposed to be this big time feminist. You know, I mean, look, if you're into the myth of following, if you're into, you know, following these women, see, that's the other thing, Lupe, that really got me to the point where I'm even talking about this now. You know, I mentioned, we're not even going to do that, no, man. Really. Well, okay, what I'm trying to say is, you know, we got to get beyond these circular arguments. We got to move beyond the, you know, the cliches. You know, the idea, and this is what someone got upset with me about, the idea that Tom Joyner is going to help out Rachel Gentile with a scholarship. Well, that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that. Of course, I commend him for that. But all I said was, it was nothing negative against Tom Joyner. All I said was, is that what about the other Rachel Gentiles? Because the bottom line is, if this had not happened to Trayvon Martin, and has she not had to go on the stand, if the media did not make her a center of this and did not basically put her on trial when she was on the stand, she would not even have come more than likely to his attention. And, you know, I'm not knocking the charity or what have you. I'm just saying that Tom Joyner is not the only Negro out here with money. Now, Sammy Davis actually used to do the same thing. I mean, you know, he's not the only one. And there are programs like that. But I also see it in an entire swath of black kids that are totally overlooked. They're not on TV. They're not on reality TV. They're not getting in trouble. It's just that nobody gives a fuck about them. And frankly, they come out of communities where, you know, they're living on top of one another and what have you. They're living like sardines in these, you know, housing developments in these projects, all on Section 8 and what have you. And, you know, let's just be straight. You know, a lot of young people coming out, a lot of our young people coming out of these environments, they don't have a lot of home training. You dig what I'm saying? They don't have a lot of decorum. So a lot of the Huxtable types, and I'm calling it like that because that's what they are. A lot of these fantasy Negroes, these living in a fantasy Negroes, they don't even want to deal with these kids because of that. And I understand that. I understand that. But you got enough money, you got enough goddamn influence, at least amongst the black goddamn elite, to do something more than pick and choose people that you're going to put into these institutions. Because what I'm saying, brothers and sisters, this is not some Illuminati bullshit that you could hear from Professor Griff. And again, this is no disrespect. But, you know, it's all conspiracy. It's all the Illuminati. It's like a group of white guys, and some of you think a group of Jewish fellas that sit around a table in a dark room with a skull and center and a rose and what have you, and sit there and like, yeah, man, you know, this is it, and this is how we're going to control the world and what have you. No, man, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's not like that. See, you know, this is why I think the Bilderberger Group went ahead and allowed a lot of that shit to be public, because, some of you are suckers, man, for, you know, the fantastic. You rather believe something that is way out of bounds, way out of the way of any kind of sensible logic.
And then you got the truth laying right in front of you, as pragmatic and as simplistic as a glass of clear water, and you don't want to accept it. You just don't want to accept it. Because, you know, for one thing, you know, if you've been leaving, you know, believing in the fantasies for so goddamn long, who the hell wants to be proven wrong? It's embarrassing, isn't it? For those of you who are pumping that Illuminati nonsense and pumping that Jewish conspiracy bullshit. You know, I'm embarrassed every time I see a black man on the bus reading the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. I'm embarrassed. I'm fucking embarrassed. How many goddamn times has that shit been discredited? Not just because the Jewish community said that it was bullshit, but because it's a goddamn direct plagiarism of an earlier fucking French morality play. It's bullshit. The damn Russian secret police, the Cheka, came up with that because they wanted to cause social unrest. And because people don't ask questions and they just spread rumors amongst themselves, it had the effect that they were looking for. And there were Jewish people stabbed all up and down goddamn Europe because of this. And here it is, 2013, and you're still doing the same thing because you're doing what the fuck I'm talking about. You think circular. Now, I know I've said, what was it, last show, maybe the show before last, that, you know, Europeans, yeah, because I was talking about Jacques Derrida and the deconstructionists, and the Europeans go in a straight line when it comes to everything that they do, right or wrong, and, you know, you have to be on the line. You got to be on the yellow line. You know, you can't be on the yellow line. You got to be one or the other. You can't straddle the fence. You can't look for the grays. You know, there's no... You know, there's no ambiguities. You never ask the deeper questions. You know, but and some can be nasty. I know the cultural nationalists will like it when I say this one, even though that's not exactly what I'm trying to get to in terms of some xenophobic, eugenic bullshit. But Europeans do think in terms of real simplicities. I mean, we're able to build towers, a lot of the libertarians say, right? This is what one said to me. Oh, we got this going on. We got that going on. Yeah, we're so stupid. And I'm like, well, if you're beating the shit out of everybody else and they don't have enough time to think because they're trying to survive, well, yeah, that gives you a hell of a lot of time to develop, doesn't it? Especially when you're ripping off other people for many of these goddamn ideas anyway. You know, and of course, they don't want to hear that argument. Yeah. They don't want to hear that argument. And a lot of us don't know enough. We don't have enough of a background to actually give them a fucking, you know, a real legitimate goddamn argument. Because we're too busy believing in fucking conspiracies. And one of the biggest goddamn conspiracies that the mainstream Negro in the United States believes in is that if he continues to do everything that the white man asks him to do, serving in the military, you know, believing in them, right? Believing in their religions and their religious takes on it. I mean, you can have your little black church every now and again. We'll let you keep that because it's cool. It makes it look like things are diverse. But the bottom line is you better look at Jesus the way we goddamn look at it. And if you start talking about liberation theology, then we start to question your Christianity. Matter of fact, we start to question whether or not you like white folks. Do you really think all of that brouhaha that went down with the Reverend Wright, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, was really about Obama? Do you really believe that? There is nothing racist about that church. And there is nothing racist about that pastor. This is coming from an atheist. There's nothing racist about what the fuck they were doing. They had African-centered church because they were dealing with the African fucking community. And I have to remind these libertarian GOP Republican numbskulls that if we were allowed in your motherfucking churches, then there wouldn't have been a need for a fucking black church. But see, you pick and choose, you know, fucking history, just like, you know, what? Hitler? Right? Goebbels? You know? I know you like to put everything on Stalin, but see, Stalin didn't lie as much as he just didn't tell you. You know, you just didn't have a right to know. You know, whereas with the Nazis, man, you know, they just fucking changed history, you know? And yeah, of course, I know about the photographs and bullshit with Stalin, you know, fucking cares, you know. I mean, for everything that they said Stalin did, man, I can point to shit happening in the capitalist world that was 10 times to 12 times fucking worse. So, you know, whatever. But anyway, all right, man, that's all I got to say about that, at least for the time being, you know, because I don't know where else to go with it. Get past the goddamn cliches. Yes, we are all brothers. That's a given. Then what? Then what? You know, your great leader just said for you to accept the decision. to accept it. Now, ask yourself, would he tell the gay community to accept the decision if the victim was gay? And I'm going to say it like this too, if the victim was a white, gay, young male, he would have made a video, he would have called the mother, he would have had press conferences, he would have came up with a task force, there would have been a commission. You know exactly what the fuck I'm talking about. And it's not because they have a love of gay folks, it's because they, at this point, still need gay support. They need gay support for the military. What was it, Lieutenant Choi, the one who went to court and went through all of that nonsense so that they would accept him being gay and allow him to wear that uniform so he can go do colonialism and imperialism elsewhere? Yeah. Is that really what the gay lobby is about? You tell me. What is the gay lobby about? It sounds like, to me, the same mind clusterfuck that the African community in the United States is dealing with. Same goddamn thing. You don't know where you're going. You don't know where to go. You don't know how to get there. You're pissed at anybody that tries to give you any kind of direction. And if somebody black tries to give you direction, you tell them to fuck off. I'm talking to somebody out there, man. Somebody hears me. You dig what I'm saying? You know, it's like, what is it with some of us? Especially when you got some goddamn education and, if you made a little money and if you move into a mixed neighborhood and don't get a condo, because I've had a lot of people flip on me after they got some property. You know, worked in the same goddamn dirty blue collar jobs I did, finally got some property, you know, and all of a sudden they were a homeowner and they just didn't have time to have lunch with me anymore, you know, because they went to a better church, you know, right? Well, my son's in college. Well, bully for you, you know, good for you. So I'm supposed to kiss your ass now and shit because you're a better Negro than me, right? Because you were able to do that. Well, fucking good for you. You know? I thought that's what the fuck you were supposed to do. So why the fuck am I supposed to praise you for this shit? Good for you. You know, if you really want to do something, be a better example by not being a motherfucking, you know, uppity goddamn Negro because you were able to motherfucking make that kind of a come up. You know, why don't you come back and have lunch with your other motherfucking brothers and shit who are having mayonnaise goddamn sandwiches and explain to us how you were able to do that. Each one teach one. But see, no, a lot of motherfuckers in the community, once they get their little bit of money, once they think they get a little bit of status, they're gone, man. And then they start to judge every goddamn buddy else. And, you know, and that's another fucking thing. You know, if everybody who was, saying, you know, whatever the hell they had to say about, Gentil, you know, here was, and like I said to Lupe, you know, this is why I got crossed, because I consider myself being supportive of this woman, and the way I was spoken to on Twitter about this was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And, you know, and I wanted to go further, but so fuck it, you know, I'll say it now. The only reason anybody is saying right now, and I'm saying this for all those motherfucking, you know, girls out there who are around the way, who are fucking trying to do their goddamn best, who ain't trying to hurt no fucking buddy, they're not fucking, you know, the stereotypical angry black woman, you know, all that bullshit, which we're going to get into in another show, you know. But, you know, they're out there doing what the fuck they need to do, and, you know, nobody pays them any fucking attention, man, right? And how do most Africans refer to them? Hood rats. Right? Right? How many people call Rachel Gentile a hood rat until they realized that she was on TV and now they see her in a totally different light because now they see her as being representative of black people, so now they feel that they need to support her. But did they support her the day before that shit, though? Because a whole lot of black people didn't support her at all when she was on the goddamn stand. I remember fucking black folks around me in my motherfucking city, those around my motherfucking circle who call themselves to be elevated and educated black folks, right? Educated African Americans. One of them with a fucking PhD who laughed at her. They laughed at her fucking use of English. They laughed at her hair. You dig what I'm saying? They totally made fun of her. But then after all of this, after she went on Piers Morgan, all of a sudden now they want to be supportive of the sister. And now that Tom Joyner, again, I'm not knocking Tom Joyner. I got no beef with Tom Joyner. And anybody says that I have a beef with Tom Joyner is a motherfucking liar. Alright? I have no beef with that man. I don't know him. Why would I have a quarrel with him? You dig what I'm saying? You know, it's like, you know, why are people trying to make this personal? You know, like I said, you know, a lot of people out here like rah-rah because they don't know how else to think because you're surrounded by so much goddamn confusion. You don't know how to separate the wheat from the chaff. You don't know how to separate yourself and be objective and ask yourself what the fuck is really going on down that track. You're not even doing this. No analysis, no nothing, just venom. And, you know, I'm really tired of these Twitter barracudas, man, on social media that, you know, if you disagree with them, and I hate to say this, a lot of you are sisters. You just get nasty and you know, insult and cut people down. And I know there's men out there doing the same goddamn thing, but you know what? They're not dealing with that particular stereotype. You are. Now, you know, I don't mean to get into this any deeper, but it's indicative of what the fuck I'm talking about. You know, when you keep acting in that, you know, that same old goddamn meme. You live up to that goddamn meme. You got a lot of females out here that are trying to live up to all that chaos they see on Basketball Wives and Real Housewives of Atlanta and all this kind of bullshit, you know. Causing, you know, problems in their relationships and problems between, you know, with their friendships and so on that they didn't have before. Trying to live a fantasy. Trying to be something that they're fucking not. I mean, how many of you out there know somebody trying to be Beyonce? How many goddamn blonde women do you see on the bus when you're going to work in the fucking morning? Who are black with green and blue contacts and shit, you know, who would then talk to you about how about their love for Jesus Christ and how they can't accept gay people because they're not natural. Well, what the fuck are you doing? What the fuck are you doing? I know a woman right now who's a clerk in a you know, beauty supply shop. She told me that they're selling, ever since Beyonce has gotten lighter and lighter, they're selling more and more of these skin lightening creams. Which is damaging people. It's damaging your skin and it's damaging your goddamn mind and body and spirit. You know, it's like, what the hell is wrong with you? Right? Because you're caught in this circle of me. So yeah, I know I went on another tangent, but fuck it, man. Roll with me, man. Because, you know, this bothers me because we never discussed this sort of thing. You know, we just lash out at each other. This isn't conflict resolution. You dig what I'm saying? This isn't conflict resolution. We're not talking to each other no goddamn more. You know, get a copy of Wattstax or watch a copy of Wattstax and see what black men and black women had to say about each other. I don't hear these goddamn discussions anymore. All I hear is bitch and nigga this and nigga that. You know, I don't hear any discussion anymore. But I hear a lot of white, you know, I hear a lot of black women, though, complaining about a lot of black men or what they think are a lot of black men, because it really isn't as much as you think. But, you know, if you think that it's more than so, you maybe need to ask yourself, goddamn why. You know, we got a lot of confusion and shit. You know, you maybe need to ask yourself why. You know, if you're going to perpetuate and try to live up to the stereotypes that are in these goddamn hip-hop videos that are produced by whom? They're not produced, well, they're produced on the creative end by black people. But, you know, what the hell is really going on? Who created the entire framework, the structure for this in the first goddamn place? How many of those women in those goddamn videos look like the women around where you live? See, what I'm saying is, what I'm trying to point out is, and maybe I'm going about this in a roundabout way and in a complex way, because, you know, I'm trying to break this down. I'm trying to deconstruct this as I'm explaining it to you. This is not a script. My fucking, you know, my analysis here, my critique is that the African community is wishy-washy. You talk Malcolm, but you didn't support him when he was alive, and you really don't need to support his legacy now that he's passed. You know, there's a lot of talk about the Black Panther Party for self-defense, but there's no real discussion or education or understanding of what was going on with that. Because if there was, the 10-point program would be a topic of discussion for every black man and woman in America. What I'm saying is that Rachel Gentil in brass tacks. Again, no disrespect to her and no disrespect to Trayvon Martin, but let's just point it out. Nobody gave a fuck about her before this, because when she was on the stand, black people were mocking her too. And making fun of her and basically calling her a fucking hood rat. And now that the entire, you know, thing has changed because Tom Joyner, who, and I'm sorry, this is not disrespect, this is analysis. The man is a well-respected, you know, figure in the community. He's a well-respected media figure. And like I said, and I tried to point out to that numbskull on Twitter, I know what the man does. We all know what the man does. But the point is that until he put his golden finger on it, nobody gave a fuck about her. This is what I'm saying. Yeah, there was a handful of people supportive of her. But I heard a whole lot of goddamn people laughing at her ass, making fun of her, making fun of the way she spoke, laughing at her. And until she got some sympathy on Piers Morgan, nobody gave a fuck about her or any other fucking black woman who looked like her or lived like her or comes out of her goddamn social position. So until somebody from, you know, one of the, you know, of the 400 club, and again, I'm not, this is a knock. I'm talking about the attitude of the majority of the rich, elite, supposedly educated and elevated black community, because one of them decided that he's going to vouch for her, all of a sudden now the attitude has changed. So that's why I ask, what about the other Rachel Chantiles? What about them? What about them? They're left out there by their goddamn selves. What about them? What about them? So, you know, if you're out there and you take that as an insult to your class, that's your goddamn problem. Because that is part of the goddamn problem. See, the black community has not had the class discussion yet. Because no one wants to explain this. You know, I mean, you have Glenn Ford and what have you trying to do that. You do have people who are trying to explain that. Daruba Ben-Wahad has been trying to explain this as a Black Panther for how many goddamn years? And what did he suffer because of it? And how many blacks even know what the fuck he sacrificed? This is what I'm talking about. Because if you understand that struggle, and if you understand the class aspects of it, we're being set apart. We're being pulled apart. This dichotomy is being done on behalf of who? It's not strengthening the African community, is it? It's separating us. It separates those who consider themselves to be the acceptable, elevated, you know, black, right? As opposed to the unacceptable embarrassment, right? You know, we don't want to acknowledge the Claudines out there. You understand what I'm saying? Madam C.J. Walker, yeah, well, we'll look at her because, well, she became a millionaire teaching and convincing black women that they should straighten their hair so they can look like the pretty white woman. That's exactly what the ad said. That's exactly what the ad said. You can find them online. You can go to libraries and find copies of those original newspaper adverts that Madam C.J. Walker put out there for her hair straightening kit. And there was a debate at the time in the black newspapers when we actually had a hell of a lot of goddamn black newspapers, when there was a hell of a lot of newspapers in the United States, period, where people made it clear that I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to turn on my race. I'm not going to turn my back on my people by straightening my hair to look like something that I'm not. So I'm pointing out a dichotomy, you know, between us as a people that we're not discussing, that we're not looking at. I'm Geechee. You can't expect any less of me. Yeah, man. That's for right now anyway. That's what I got to say about that. Alright? That's what I got to say about that. So look, I didn't mean for this to go on too long, as long as I did, and I apologize for that. But those of you who have been around here for a while, you know how it goes. So we're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves, and you can go stretch your legs, you know, get yourself a libation, roll one if you want to, if you're into that sort of thing. Whatever it is, you know, you need to do to relax, because you know, thinking about all this, it's heavy, and we shouldn't have to be doing this. But see, we wouldn't be in this position if the man that most of us voted for. Now, I did not vote for him. I'm telling you straight up, I did not vote for Obama. Frankly, I didn't vote for anybody because to me, there was nobody to vote for. Okay? I don't want to, you know, be a part of something like that, because that makes me part of this nonsense. You guys went out there and voted for him. What's he done for you? He's done more for Israel than he's done for you. He's done more for the corporations than he's done for you. Okay? He's done more for British Petroleum. I know they don't call it that anymore, BP, whatever. They're British and they deal in petroleum. He's done more for them after the damage that they did here. Alright? He's done more for the banks than he's done for you. well, there was a coup in Honduras. You had all this chaos here in Egypt, and then you hear recently that there was some involvement with this. So it's like, you know, come on, man. What's going on in Africa right now? What's been going on in Africa? What's going on with AFRICOM? Do you know about it? You know how many black people I talk to who don't know, they have never heard of AFRICOM and have never heard of Monsanto? It wasn't under Bush that the Monsanto Protection Act was signed. It was under Obama. Or, you know, the same man who won the Nobel Peace Prize. I haven't even talked about drones very much here. And I mentioned Bradley Manning, but I mean, hey, that's a given, right? Human rights. That's a given, right? The collateral damage thing, you know, I mean, come on. We're talking about a war crime here. What's he done? We're talking about, the same cat who boycotted the Durban conference, the International Conference Against Racism, twice. Not once, twice. So, yeah, you know, this is what you voted for. You want to be mainstream? Hey, the mainstream looks at you as a nigger. But you want to be a part of them. You want to sit next to them. You want to sit next to people who don't really give a damn about you. That probably really hate you down to their core. You know, you want to sit with a Republican and kick back, tequila shots while he's voting against your best interest. While he's voting to remove your voting rights. Look what they're doing to women. This is happening under Obama. It's not happening under Bush. This is happening under Obama. I mean, you can't carry tampons in Texas. You can't carry condoms in New York. I mean, you know, what is this? This is what you want, right? This is what you voted for. So, you know, in a lot, you know, yeah, they don't want to hear any class aspect because they're still waiting for it. They think they're going to make a come up because this man is in here. You know, they're taking some, like, you know, what's the word I want? When you're vicariously living somebody else's fantasy, you know, you're trying to live your goddamn life in somebody else's fucking fantasy, you know. Well, I'm somebody because he's president. No, you're nobody. The Zimmerman verdict made that clear. Obama being president doesn't mean a goddamn thing. You're nobody. You're nobody. You important blacks because you're having lunch with these bigwigs and you get to go on these TV shows? You're nobody. Did I just say, you know, I mean, how many damn films as far as Whitaker made? How many awards? Hasn't he won awards for his work? He's been racially profiled. You know, Don Lemon's been racially profiled. Eric Holder just admitted today that he's been racially profiled. So it's like, come on, man. Come on. Come on. Yeah, all right. Sorry, Lupe's telling me to move on. All right, look, we're going to take a... We really are going to take a break now, so stations may identify themselves. And we're going to come back with a dispatch, a joint interview with our special correspondent in Ireland, Darcy Della Prosa, about a case that, the mainstream Negroes don't seem to be saying anything about, even though these men that I'm about to mention represent everything that they run their mouths about. And, especially these black Republicans, they've left these people out to dry. They just left them out there in the wilderness by themselves. And we're going to talk about this. So this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
You are listening to Aboriginal Press News Service Public Radio. Indigenous talk radio for Celtic Scotland and other people living in the Fourth World.
everybody had a piece of my toe. And they kept telling me, man, you got to make it. You got to be a credit to your race. What am I doing this shit for? To express love and dedication to my country. To lick ass. But I told that board to let go of my toe. They said, what? you know the way white folks can do when they can't believe their ears. So I screamed at the top of my voice, let go my nigger toe so I can stand up and be a man.
Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for intelligent aboriginals.
Hello, I'm Carol Gordon. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that prevents pregnancy. It is not an abortion pill and does not cause an abortion, only the prevention of pregnancy. If you have had unprotected sex or have been raped and need Plan B, contact your local Indian Health Service. You have a legal right to receive Plan B over the counter, meaning without a prescription or a doctor's appointment if you are 17 or older. Plan B must be taken within 72 hours of sexual intercourse to be effective. For more information, call 605-487-7072. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
I'm gonna stand until I can't stand no more if I have to stand by myself.
The American people are the last people to wake up.
Prisons are becoming an integral part of the U.S. economy.
People of color organize critical thinking, strategic work, and direct action for social, racial, gender, and economic justice.
A world run by a handful of greedy bankers and CEOs who nobody elected can't possibly last.
People of Color Organize features intersections of race, politics, feminism, movement, class, internationalism, and theory.
This is about the Black Panthers. This is about the American Indian movement. This is about all of us.
Visit us online at peopleofcolororganize.com. Follow us on Twitter at POC Organize and Facebook at facebook.com/peopleofcolororganize. You can also find us on Tumblr at peopleofcolor.tumblr.com.
We're organizing against what we term genocide.
Idle No More calls all people
to join in peaceful revolution,
to honor indigenous sovereignty,
and protect the land and water
for generations to come.
Mexicans, South Americans, all indigenous people, get inspired,
take action,
and become a part of the solution.
It's my future,
your future,
our future.
We are the protectors of Mother Earth.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up and protect it.
Stand up
and protect our Earth.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
Do not sit.
And become a part of this incredible movement.
The time has come.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Idle no more.
Become idle no more.
The Downing Street memo is relevant. The facts on the ground tell us there were no WMDs in Iraq and no links to 9/11. So, was the president misinformed about these issues? Or was intelligence being fixed to support an invasion? To read the Downing Street memo, or for news and information about it, go to the website afterdowningstreet.org.
Peace. This is Kamal Amani, a.k.a. Kamal Supreme. I'm in Brooklyn, Brooklyn, Medina, with my man Jonathan, his daughter Jasmine, my cousin Will, my wife Diane, my baby Hassan, and we are newblackmusic.net. And the name of this poem I'm about to do is called The N-Word. Historically, we're forgetting where we came from and what the black man and woman do in America transmits all over the world and possibly the universe. But people are getting the wrong interpretation of our culture, history, and words such as the N-word. So they're using it lightly. Now, if we're going to use it, I don't think it should be as a term of endearment. Maybe dramatically, like I'm doing in performance poetry, you know, or maybe in a drama, to show forth our history and bring forth meaning. But it shouldn't be something that anybody can toss off their lips, because we can't call Jews certain names because we'll be anti-Semitic, and we can't call Hispanics certain names because we'll be anti-them. So we can't call white people certain names, so why should we allow people to call us nigger? Why should we call ourselves nigger as a term of endearment? You know, I read articles that there's a store in Africa called Nigger, and they say they got that from Puff, and they think there's nothing wrong with nigger. They just was listening to his hip-hop, and that nigger's a good thing over there, you know? And, you know, I got white boys calling each other nigger, calling black people nigger, Spanish calling black nigger. Gotta stop. Gotta stop. Everybody got to get back into the history, for real. We're glorious people, but we're forgetting our history. We're here for a reason. God only let us come here because he know we can handle it. So let's handle it, and let's rise above it, and let's rule again. Rule righteously. What's up, my nigga? With the term of the demon that he gave, I paused and looked around like, talking to me, because to me, a nigga is a modern day slave. See, niggas is living in America with one foot in the devil's grave, but because you getting paid, nigga, you think you got it made, nigga. You think you got powers that you can pull a trigger, nigga, and kill your brothers and sisters, nigga, because you are irate and you can show and prove that you hate a nigga. My father used to say the black man is a coward, because he want to act like a man, while real men are handling the affairs of the world. Real men are trading diamonds, copper, gold, oil, steel, and uranium. Real men are thinking long range and manipulating interest rates in the stock exchange, while niggas is playing games. Niggas is playing games like, who shot ya? Niggas is playing games like, who's darker? And who look like Beyonce? And who look like Miss Parker? Who got the baddest prefabricated MTV crib? Who got the baddest ass, girl? What you mean? You should be playing hopscotch, girl. You only 13. And who's pimping they ride? Nigga, do you know what pimp means? Nigga, you being pimped by the establishment as a political machine. Being pimped by immigrant merchants in our hoods. We got Arabs selling us swine, blunts, and cancer sticks. Koreans selling us hip-hop clothes. And international niggas selling us what we put up in our nose. Parasites. You ask them, yo, why you buy from Parasites? They be like, shh, it's all good, dog. It's all gravy. Niggas is being pimped by the Army, Air Force, Marines, and Navy. Niggas are being pimped by the prison industrial complex. And you think niggas pimping just got to do with money, cash, hoes, and sex. Niggas need to study lessons that Elijah, Malcolm Lewis, Clarence and them gave. And maybe niggas will realize that a nigga is a modern day slave. Nigga.
This is DJ Fusion of the Fuse Box Radio Broadcast and BlackRadiosBack.com. You're now listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, another slice of real black radio for the masses. All right? Peace.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm your host, Angry Indian, sitting in with our engineer and executive producer, Guadalupe Morales. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting to the international Aboriginal community from occupied North America. Subscribe to our international podcast by way of our RSS feed at feedburner.com/Aboriginal Press Radio. And we are always carried by an ever-widening network of independent information providers not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model. That would include Berkeley Liberation Radio, and you can find us on the Thank God It's Friday morning slot on Fridays on Radio Free Kansas. You can also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk, and you can always email our studios at aboriginalradio@lababit.com. And if you catch us on Skype, you can reach us at Aboriginal News Group. So now I welcome back my brothers and sisters of the fourth world, our non-Aboriginal ideological comrades, and the negative elements staunchly opposed to human justice and social harmony. But in spite of all that, they take the time to listen to this show on the sly anyway. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Now, there's a case out there that is really not being discussed, and you would think that it would be discussed with the Snowden scandal, with the WikiLeaks scandal, with the trial of Bradley Manning that's going on right now. It turns out that six IT professionals, five black men and one white, and I only mention that for the simple fact that when it comes to IT, you don't see a lot of shade. You dig what I'm saying? You don't see a lot of colors. And, you know, these are five black and one white men. You know, I mean, I'm going to name them here. Kendrick Barnes, Gary L. Walker, Demetrius K. Harper, David A. Cipolla, Clinton A. Stewart, and David A. Banks. Now, they had a idea, right? This is the U.S. They had an idea. They had an idea that they, as IT professionals and as ex-military men, that they were going to step up and do something to help the security of the United States. So they came up with a program, a software application called CILC. The name of the small company, and I say it's a small company because they only had 18 employees, but it was known as IRP Solutions, that concentrated on developing a software application called CILC, which stands for Case Investigative Lifecycle. This software, now I'm reading now from the Dr. Vibe show, because he did a show on this earlier today, and I also want you to check it out. We're going to put the link up when we make this show public, which will be sometime this afternoon. But again, I'm reading from him here. Now, this stands for Case Investigative Life Cycle. Now, this software was developed to assist law enforcement in investigating a case through the prosecution. Now, I don't know the details. We'll find out about that later. But supposedly, the necessity of this type of software was overly apparent, as the government indicated that one of the main reasons that they were saying. Now, you know how we feel about 911 over here. You know, we don't believe the official story because we know the official story. But the idea was, and anyone who's ever worked in any sort of an office or has ever worked for government knows, government agencies do not share information. So, you know, they decided to step up, do the capitalist thing, present this solution, and of course, make a living, employ people, do all of that thing, right? But see, it's, for whatever reason, it didn't work out that way. Still don't really know what the hell is going on. Sam Thurman, a president of Just Cause, and Cliff Stewart, a brother of one of the IPR men, they're explaining on the Dr. Vibe show that this is a misuse of power, that this is an abuse in terms of, you know, this whole capitalist meme, right? This whole war pornography meme. Now, I don't want to judge these brothers because I don't know, and I'm including the white man when I say brothers, because obviously he had enough humanity to work with people who are different than him, and he actually acted like what the American rhetoric says, and I think it's a goddamn disgusting shame that these men, including that man, are going through whatever it is they're going through. And the fact that the public doesn't know anything about this, the fact that Lupe and I were trying to find other information, I mean, we remember when the story was first reported, but there's no information out there. And like I said, when you have Eric Snowden, when you have Bradley Manning, when you have everything that's going on with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks, how is it that you let this group of men, because of a demographic factor, that you let these group of men language in this situation, and nobody seems to really care enough to want to investigate, to want to ask what the hell is happening. So, you know, all praise and due, you know, credit to Dr. Vibe up in Toronto, Canada for bringing up this situation, because frankly, we've been sleeping on it because there wasn't enough information for us out there to really be able to collate anything to have a particular opinion, and we don't really have a position on this. But, you know, in a time of Trayvon Martin and the end of the Zimmerman verdict, we have to kind of ask, if you have an IT thing, you're talking about information sharing and what have you, if you're talking about leaks, why are you not going to raise the case? Why are you not going to raise the case of the IRP6? This doesn't make any sense, unless, like I said, it's because they're African. So we're going to take a very quick break so stations may identify themselves, and we're going to bring on Darcy Della Prosa, you already know, but we're going to bring on somebody else to discuss this case because, frankly, I don't know anything about it. So I want to get your ears quivering on this because this is obviously one of those stories that is being overlooked. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Remember, brothers, liberation is near. Even if they do count our votes several times every 4 years.
Internet radio for smarter original.
Hi, my name is Isidore Bonney, and I'm from the San Carlos Apache tribe. I am 39 years old, and I am gay. And for the past 4 years, I have been living with full-blown AIDS and hepatitis C, two deadly viruses that are slowly eating and killing me. As a result of my diagnosis, I had no choice but to leave my reservation because of the stigma and the ignorance and the lack of confidentiality. So I had to live on the streets of Phoenix for 2 years, eating out of dumpsters, getting beaten, and wondering what else am I going to do with my life, if I had one, not really sure if I was going to live another year. But as a result, I managed to gain enough strength and confidence to face my debilitating illnesses and ignorance and the stigma that I was getting. And I went to the media who welcomed me. They told my story to the world. And since educating people, this has been a blessing to me. It has been more healing for me to be open with myself and with others. And as a result, I've been educating people not only in Arizona but throughout the country. And I think that's the best thing that I can do, is to just tell my story and educate people. And a lot of people ask me, Isidore, how can ignorance or stigma be reduced? And all I can say is that you have to just be educated. Educate yourself. Educate other people. Accept people, whether they're gay or not. If they have AIDS, care about them. Love brings healing where medication does not. And if you have any questions about HIV and AIDS, I would suggest that you contact your local AIDS office or your local AIDS agency for more information. But in the meantime, just know that AIDS has hit Native people, and we're doing all we can to fight this other debilitating illness that has struck our people, as others have in the past, and we will not give up.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind, slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Do yourself a favor. Get a mind transplant. Listen to independent radio, the alternative media in general. This is Ward Churchill saying have a nice day.
Back in the 1950s and the 1960s and the 1970s, the United States government had programs, some involving simple surveillance, some involving ways of getting information, some involving plots, basically to frame people for crimes, and some involving outright murder.
was secret at the time because it was by and large illegal.
Really what COINTELPRO is, you know, a militarization of criminal justice.
It was a cold word that was used by the FBI, actual war against the entire left movement.
To eliminate, intimidate, incarcerate, and terrorize a people.
It was a covert war strategy, and it was done because the government thought there was a war going on.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. Yeah, I want to welcome back Darcy Della Prosa. You remember her. You know, that's our sister in Ireland that's you know, doing the work that should be done over here. You dig what I'm saying? And she's made it international. And, you know, Darcy, thank you for coming back on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so let me know what's going on here. We have a story that, you know, as I was saying earlier at the last segment, I don't know anything about other than the fact that it went down. You know, what exactly is going on with the case of the IRP6?
This is a case I've been following on Twitter. I got to correspond with Esther Lopez and a few of the others who are main advocates for the case. This is a biased case, but I will let Esther herself explain more.
Yeah, Esther, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Now, Ms. Lopez, you have been, from what I understand, on top of this case, and you know, you too can really only, you know, give us like the very basics of it, because the news, you know, the journalistic cadre out there that's supposed to be protecting our rights and keeping the public informed, they're not saying anything. So, you know, please give us a quick breakdown, and welcome to the show.
Right. Well, thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate that so very much, and so does the IRP6 guys and their families. But the thing that's taking place here, and you hit it, you know, the nail on the head when you were expressing what the Dr. Vibe show has put out there on it. And we do understand that there's not a lot of information, you know, running around out there on it. The government doesn't want information out there on this case. And the reason for that is because of the software. Now, the thing is, as you were explaining from the top of the show, we have these six men, five black guys and one white guy, who are sitting right now in a federal prison serving terms from 7 to 11 years, wrongfully convicted, all because they created software, law enforcement software, to help this country from terrorist attacks. And you know, I can't think of anything worse than you doing something and you being brought down by the same people that you are trying to help, you know, your country. And these guys did absolutely nothing wrong, absolutely nothing. Just six friends, you know, one of them had this idea to develop this software because he felt in his heart, you know, there's something that's got to be done about these terrorist attacks. You know, this is just ridiculous. And so he did get together with some of his friends, and they did develop this software in the small IT company, black-owned IT company here in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And the thing is, you know, what's so disturbing, they're saying that these guys, you know, had this purported software as if, you know, it wasn't real. It was a actual, your business was a front, is what they were trying to say, to scam staffing agencies, which is so bizarre. And if you were going to do that, why would you have retired FBI agents working in your company helping you to develop the software? If you're going to be scamming someone, that's kind of far and beyond. I don't understand that. Now, you know, all you have here, if you have debt that you owe somebody, then you take that to a civil court. You don't take that to a federal court. And this whole case is about debt that these guys owed staff and agencies. But because, you know, they wanted to get this software, and IBM, as I was explaining to you, you know, before we came on, IBM could not get the software. they decide, you know, they along with the FBI, you know, decided we're gonna put these guys out of business because we need that software. Now, IBM has been getting all this money from the Department of Justice, from Homeland Security, you know, New York Police Department, Philadelphia Police Department, all these different ones, because then they cannot come up with the software that these six men came up with. Six little men here in Colorado, they come up with the software that this big, huge company could not develop. And they've been getting paid for it hand over fist, you know, as far as money goes. Now they want to come in, take this software. They don't want to work with these guys. They don't want to partner with these guys by any stretch of the imagination. They want to take the software and call it their own and put their own label on something that they did not develop. That is not going to happen. Now, Homeland Security has looked at this first phase of this software. They're talking over $100 million just for the first part of the software to these men, to these black guys here. Now, you tell me how many IT companies that you know are owned by black men?
I can't think of any.
That is our point exactly. But you know what? They're trying to, you know, people are trying to refuse it to say that this is a racial thing. This is a racial thing. They don't want these guys to have this kind of money. They don't want them to have it. There's just no way, you know? So these guys going to sit here. They work for all these years to develop this software. And then you're going to get a search warrant to come in because you had a president from one of the staffing agencies that has friends with IBM, who have friends with IBM because she works for the does work with the federal government. Okay, IBM is one of her contractors. The government is one of her contractors. So she tells one of the guys in the IRP6, I'm going to bring you down. She sends them an email telling them, I'm going to bring you down. I'm going to let everybody know that you are a scammer and not to do business with you. I'm going to take your Audi. I'm going to take your Cadillac, and I'm going to drag your name through the mud. And that's what she did. That's exactly what she did. And then they get together, and because they have done business with Holland and Hart, who is a law firm here in Denver, Colorado, one of the hugest ones in the United States, okay? They get together with them, and they take this to the FBI the first time. The FBI said, well, this is just a civil matter, okay? This should be taken care of in civil court. Well, they wanted to make sure that it was more than just that. They came in, the FBI, with about 22 armed policemen, armed FBI agents. They raided these guys' business. They only had about 15, 16 people there. They raided their business coming in, and the search warrant said, you're going in for financial records, okay? The financial records, they put them right there in a cabinet in the middle of the floor saying, there are the financial records. Take whatever you need. Mm-hmm. They came in at 9 o'clock in the morning. They did not touch one set of financial records. Instead, they imaged every computer, starting with the janitor. They searched every person's purse. They went through their pockets. They went through their bags. They went through every single thing that they had there until 11 o'clock at night. Okay, taking absolutely no financial records, but they imaged every computer. Now, the one white gentleman that was there, okay, after they corralled all the black people into the cafeteria and told them they could not leave, and if you need to go to the restroom, somebody is going to have to escort you, okay? One of us will escort you. Well, the only white gentleman that was there, they gave them their card, told him, take your stuff, and you can leave. And call us late.
Oh.
Okay. So now you're going to tell me this is not racial crap? This is race at the yin yang. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I see from this.
Darcy, you know, you're a resident of Ireland, and you know, in many ways, Ireland has been falsely, or maybe there's a misconception. I'm not sure. I can only read what the international news reports that Ireland, in many ways, has become the racist capital of Europe. But the difference, in many ways, is that Europe acknowledges that there's an issue. What Sister Lopez is talking about is happening in the United States. We're talking about black men who are not radicals. They are not.
But then you know yourself in the States, it's very biased. There is a lot of racism.
Well, but yeah, but what I'm trying to say is, you know, these are men who obviously believed in the system, probably still believe in the system. You know, they were obviously trying to help protect this country from, you know, from foreign terrorism. So you would think that anything that would improve law enforcement in terms of response, in terms of being able to, you know, to respond, you know, to respond to emergencies would be something that they will want. But as Sister Lopez has mentioned, you know, the racial factor, and what I want to get from you being from Ireland is, how do you view this as an activist, looking at the United States from the outside, where you have people who are obviously to some degree conservative? They believe in the United States. They're obviously supportive of capitalism, and they were supportive of the IT industry, and they were supportive of the IT industry supporting law enforcement. So what do you, you know, what could possibly be the problem other than the fact that this was a minority-owned company and that this software could have made another company that was not minority-owned multimillionaires overnight? I mean, as somebody who does not live here, now, how do you view this as an activist?
Well, my opinion is, as you know, as I'm an activist, I've seen the injustices like with Devante, Johnny Savory,
and praise you for continuing to struggle in those efforts. I don't know anyone else in Europe that is working as hard as you are on these issues.
Well, in my case, as you know, I've been advocating a long time in Johnny's case and in Devante's. It's cases that in Devante's himself, he's innocent. The system know he's innocent, but yet they still won't release him. We keep putting out there, we are trying to get a petition. We've done a petition, set up with Kim Worthy. Kim Worthy knows about Devante's case. She has the power to release him, but she won't back down. I hit myself against a wall because I continue fighting these cases. And to me, like with Ethel and the rest of the advocates in the IPSec, all I can say to you is from what I see, I know it's racial bias, but all you can keep doing is just being a voice and keep putting their cases out there and hoping that it will come and fall on the right authority that will take it up. They should be released. They shouldn't be in prison.
That's right.
No, because, I mean, as you know, from what I can see here, and as I'm hearing from Sister Lopez, it's just, you know, here it is, they had a good idea. And I hate to say it this way because it sounds bad, but I really don't know how else to say this. It seems that, you know, white folks were just, hey, you know, we just cannot stand here and let these Negroes, you know, make this kind of money and have this kind of influence on the society. You know, we're just not going to allow this to happen. And we understand our history here in North America, and we know that this has happened before.
Yeah.
This has happened many times before. But, you know, Sister Lopez, I mean, you know, after 9/11, mm-hmm. when we're all supposed to be Americans, when we're all yeah. supposed to be brothers and sisters, you know, regardless of political affiliation, regardless of religion, creed, and sexual orientation and all of that, what right. is the, you know, what excuse can it be for the American public and for the particular person that is in leadership right now to not discuss this case and not bring it out? I mean, who is heading the Justice Department? What the hell is going on here?
You know what? That is the question that we find that nobody wants to answer. Nobody wants to answer. We have a group of people, not just myself, but a whole team of people who are constantly sending letters. We're making phone calls, emails to Eric Holder's office, to talking to his confidential assistant, Annie Holder. Nobody will give us any information. Nobody will tell us anything. Eric Holder refuses to say one word about what's going on here. You know, he's so busy raking the leaves over his own crap that he messed up and stepped back in, that he doesn't even have time to reach out to anybody else, or he doesn't care that anybody else has a problem here. It's like, why are you there? What are you there for? You're over the Department of Justice. Every letter that we have written to these people have sent us back to the exact same place that we started from. Now, with this case and with these guys, they, during their trial, they had the trial lasted about 3.5 weeks or so. Okay. During this trial, there was a bench conference that took place, and they were all there talking to the judge, you know, the court reporter, everybody. Now, she tells them The judge tells these guys, who were pro se at the time, okay? They were pro se. They were defending themselves because they had to get rid of those crooked public defenders that were assigned to them who were on the side of the government. They were not going to have it. They figured it's best if we defend ourselves. They're working for the government and they're going to tell us to take a plea bargain and we have done absolutely nothing. That was never going to happen. Okay? So they tell them to take a plea bargain. They do not. But during this bench conference, okay, she tells them one of them is going to have to testify. Since you can't get your witnesses here, which she did absolutely nothing to assist them in getting them there. If you can't get your witnesses here, then one of you going to have to take this stand. She's going to tell them, one of them going to have to take that stand, or she's going to throw out their case. You know what I'm saying? How are you going to do some crap like that when the prosecutor has already said his was going to take a certain amount of time, okay? So the guys understood that. Some of their witnesses were going to have to come from out of the state. So they were relying on the prosecution to use the time that he has said that he was going to take for the case. So their witnesses were not there. Now, the judge has been really nasty to them the entire trial. First of all, she doesn't like the fact that you got all you guys sitting here, you're going to represent yourselves and you're black. There's no way. This crap is racist all over the place. But then during this bench conference is where she violated the Fifth Amendment right by making them take the stand to testify against themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay? So then the guys are asking, can we get a copy of that unedited transcript? They don't give them that copy. They give them some junk, but they didn't give them nothing about what took place with this bench conference.
So what is the standing of their legal representation at this point?
Well, right now, you know, they do have appellate counselors right now, you know, who their cases and appeals at this moment right now. But without the transcript, without the entire transcript, what kind of appeal are they going to get? You know what I'm saying? They should have everything there. We have been fighting tooth and nail to get this so-called missing transcript. Is what this court reporter is saying. Transcript is missing or unavailable. What are you talking about?
Is there any way that we can get the court transcripts, Ethel?
That's been what we've been fighting to get. That's why we've been constantly calling and writing to the Department of Justice and Eric Holder and President Obama and Mrs. Obama and every congressman.
And what about setting up a global petition for us?
They will not tell us how or will not even investigate why this transcript is missing in this federal criminal case. Nobody.
That is appalling.
That's crap, okay? That is crap. That's what, and all of these people are working together. They know exactly what has taken place in this case, but nobody wants to speak out and tell us anything. They're holding back. They know exactly what's going on.
Well, you know, I want to ask you as a final question as a lead out to this, because, and I'm asking this specifically because I was on online last night dealing with this, I'm just going to say what it is, you know. European white settler in North America who was supportive of the Zimmerman verdict and was out here trolling, looking for people to argue with because, you know, and sending me Thomas Sowell and other, you know, black Republican kiss asses, you know, talking about, well, they're, you know, they're, you know, conservative the way I am and you should be this way. But, and I want to ask you this. You can't get a case really where you're dealing with people who can be African and more conservative and more pro-US than what you're telling me here.
Okay.
You can't get much more I love America than what you're telling me here. Coming from black men and I want to point this out, that one of their partners, because we got a lot of cultural nationalists out there that don't, you know, that they might as well be Klan members that is of another color.
Yeah.
You know, because their whole view of racism is really just as narrow-minded, just as xenophobic, and just as goddamn bad as the people that we're dealing with. But you got a lot of black Republicans, a lot of black conservatives, and I named Thomas Sowell, and there's also Clarence Thomas, right? Yeah. You know, I can go down the list, Alan West, Ben Carson, I can go down the list. Where are all these Uncle Toms?
That's it.
Where are these black Republicans when conservative black people really need them?
Yes.
And that's my question for you, because this is what these white racists really like to flow up all the time. You know, the black people who kiss ass. right? They like to throw these, Michael Steele, human lawn jockey types out here at us to say, well, this is the type of Negro you should be about. Be like Oprah. Be like Obama. Okay. Well, here you have a group of black men who were running a African-owned company where they hired their own people, and they had a white man who was willing to work with them. Brother to brother, shoulder to shoulder, on arm. This is everything all these racists in the Tea Party keep goddamn talking that they're about. Now, here's an abuse case where you have a major company. I mean, come on, ladies and gentlemen, if you're regular listeners to this show, you know what we've said about IBM here and their connections to the Nazi Party, their connections to what happened in the European Holocaust. We already know the history of IBM. This is a matter of documented fact. It's a matter of the documented record. So when we look at this and what Sister Lopez is telling us today, I ask again, where are all these goddamn black conservatives? Where are these black, Republicans? And where are the white people who claim to support all of that? Where are they in a case like this with the, IRP6 cannot get justice for their labor under a capitalist system in what is supposed to be the freest country in the world under, being led right now by a black man? Sister Lopez.
That's it. And he and the black man that's doing absolutely not a cotton picking thing for the people here. Not for the black people here. Nothing.
Not a thing.
Now the point that, and the one thing I want to say as far as is Obama, I don't really get this. You've got six men sitting here in prison. These men have families, these men have children. Mm-hmm. These were six Christian men. You've got a couple of them that who are ministers in the church. They all belong to the same church. They're all being taught, exactly how to live their lives, to always do what's right. One of them is the pastor's son. One of them is their son-in-law. And like I said, one of them is a Sunday school superintendent. Two of them are ministers. What are you telling me? And then so they're running a business where they're hiring. They've got white people working in the business. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that when the FBI went there, they asked them if a white woman applied to work in this kind of, in this business, would you hire her? Yes, you jackass. There was a white woman working in the in that business until she left. It's not about this is all we're going to have in here. This is all we're about. That business was about the people who was able to do the job. Mm-hmm. Okay? These weren't all friends. Some of these 19, 20 people that were in this business, these guys didn't even know them. They hired them based on their experience and their work ethics to do the job that they needed them to do. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? So when they bring all this crap in here talking about, we're here to get that, you're a liar. You're not here to get anything except the software that these men have created.
So they basically charged the people who ran this company with racism to put some yeast on what they already had in mind to do anyway.
Exactly. Now for them to have stated that these guys' business was purported software. They weren't really, this was just a company, to front and scheme these staffing agencies. Then tell me, why is these guys' software being noted in an FBI handbook? Mm-hmm. The Silk software in Colorado Springs, Colorado, from the company IRP Solutions.
Wow.
Can't be that. How is that if they are having purported software? And not only that, going back to this blame court, this judge, Christine Arguello and Greg Goldberg, they both worked in Holland and Hart. Greg Goldberg is the lawyer from Holland and Hart who hand carried this information over to his friend, the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, to tell him how to persecute these guys, how to prosecute them. Okay? This is what you're going to charge them with. This is how you're going to charge them. The judge, Christine Arguello, was a partner in the same law firm. The U.S. attorney was also a partner in that law firm. Now, granted, they weren't partners there at the same time, but when they asked the judge, Christine Arguello, to recuse herself, she refused to do so. She refused to do so. Why is that? Why would she refuse to recuse herself when she already had connections with these people and the people who brought this case about? All of this stuff is, and then this court reporter, she has, I mean, this is just over the top with her, refusing to allow even the counselors to have copies of the unedited transcript, and you're running me all over town trying to find it. You're going to tell me, well, I can go. You can go to the court clerk's office in Denver. It is filed there. It is on file there. Well, I went there. I took an hour. I drove up there, and I went there to check for myself. I went, came back and let her know she was lying. It is not there. That transcript is not there. And like I said, there is nobody in the Department of Justice. They are full of crap. They are doing what they're doing to pack their own pockets, you know, and to fill the prisons with more people so that they can make whatever kind of money that they can make off of them. They don't care. If they're black, they're going to hand it to you just like that. Mm. Just like that. They don't care if you've done something wrong, if you've not done something wrong. These six men have six families. If you have their small kids, have to go to a prison every weekend to visit their fathers. They've never been away from them. They have all kinds of issues and stuff going on.
You're talking about Christian men to get up and go to work every day. They're not taking nothing from nobody. They're earning their money.
Their family, you know, and the thing too is the money that these guys were making as contractors, okay, as contractors was more money than they were making in their own business that they had there. So these guys were making almost $200 an hour working for a contractor. Mm. A contractor. They were that intelligent IT guys, okay? And this is how they were taking care of their families and going about living their lives. Not coming up with some idea getting together that was gonna scam these staffing agencies. That's a crock of crap.
Yeah.
Sitting in prison, and something has to be done about it. And every time we go out on Twitter or wherever we go and we put the links out there for people to read the story, they are going, somebody on Twitter is canceling out the link. Oh. Every time we go back to check them, the links are being blocked out now.
Well, we'll see how long this stays up on the net, because this happened to us before when we've talked about certain subjects. You know, I just want to give Darcy a chance to have a word on this before we go out, because I wouldn't know about the story as much as I do, because I believe I actually got the first link about it from Darcy. So, you know, your thoughts on this as we go out here.
I feel we will continue supporting you. We will keep putting the links out there. We will keep letting people know the story. But I think we should look into it, seeing if we could get them, trying to find out how to get the transcripts.
Yeah.
And let's just try to, you know, get some legal professionals from the IT world who will understand the bias aspects of this case and want to be involved. And this is my challenge for you black Republican lurkers that come to this show so you can say what you want to say on your little blogs. Here are a group of conservative, patriotic, obviously Jesus believing capitalist black men who were obviously doing what they felt was their duty to do for their country. And this is the way that they're being treated. So, racism is over. I think not. Effa Lopez, thank you so much for being on. And, you know, we would like to have you on and anyone else that has data on this story so that, you know, we can get the people to understand what's happening with this.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time that you've taken to allow me to say what I needed to say. And you know, I really do appreciate you putting our story out there so that it can be everywhere that it needs to be, because people need to know about this. This can happen to anybody.
This can happen to anybody.
It can happen to anybody. You know, and black people as a whole, they don't stick together on anything. They don't stick together on absolutely anything. They may come together just for a moment when something happens, but then after that, they don't, you know, it's all said and done. And that's how people, you know, tend to get over on us as a race of people, because they know we're not going to stick together on anything. But this is
Esther,
the time is now to do something.
Could you put your links in, please?
I will.
Let people know to the websites and the Facebook page. Will you let them know how to, like, search them?
Okay, please, www.freevirp6.org.
Okay, everybody, I hope you got that information out there. I want you to go check out that link. And I also want you to check out Darcy De La Prosa's information. We're going to make sure that her links are also listed when this show is published online. We want to thank both these ladies for coming on and doing the right thing, keeping us educated, keeping us involved, keeping our ears quivering, because, you know, as I say, man, the tide is high, so we've got to understand what the hell is happening out here. Okay, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, internet media for intelligent Aboriginals.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Found in the middle of the story about the death of Lazarus, the Lord Jesus, his friend. Jesus loved Lazarus, his friend. Lazarus had died. Jesus was outside the village of Bethany. He had not yet reached the city limits. Martha had met him, and he and Martha had talked. Martha was mad, and she let the Lord know that she was mad. Jesus had reassured her with words she did not understand. I am the resurrection and the life. Whosoever believeth on me, though he were dead, yet shall he live again. And whosoever liveth and believeth shall never die. He had reassured her. She didn't understand those words, but at least he had calmed her down for just a little bit. She left Jesus there and went back to the house and called her sister Mary and told her privately, Jesus is here and he is calling for you. And when Mary heard those words, she got up quickly and went to where Jesus was, just outside of Bethany. When those who were grieving with her saw her get up quickly and go out, they ran along with her. You find that story in John 11. They thought she was going to her brother's grave site to grieve. And when Jesus saw her crying, and when Jesus saw those who were trying to console her crying, he started weeping. The text says he was greatly disturbed in spirit and he was deeply moved. He asked Mary and Martha, where have you laid him? And they said, Lord, come and see. And he cried. Jesus wept. You know, death will make you weep. When you lose somebody that you love, you will weep. When you lose somebody who is close to you, the tears will come. I ain't telling you about nothing that I read in a book somewhere. I'm telling you what I know from personal experience. I'm not telling you what I studied in pastoral counseling. I'm telling you what I have lived through. When the pain of death hits and the pain is deep, when the pain of death hits and the pain is personal, when the finality of death comes crashing in on you and those words, never again, move from the region of possibility into the heart-wrenching realm of reality. That smile that made your day, never again will you see it. That laughter that lit up your world, never again will you hear it. That wisdom that anchored your soul, never again will you experience it in this life. When that happens to you, my beloved, you will weep, you will cry. Jesus wept, Jesus cried. And most Christians learn very early in their walk of faith that John 11, 35 verse, what does it say? Jesus, come on. You know, that's the first Bible verse you memorize. You just go around the table having to say a Bible verse for dinner. What's your Bible verse? Jesus wept. But guess what? Guess what? Tonight's text teaches us that that is not the only time that Jesus wept. On this day that we call Palm Sunday, when the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully, as we just read, for all the deeds of power that they had seen. On the Sunday that we call Palm Sunday, as Jesus rode on the colt, on the Sunday before Maundy Thursday, the Sunday before Good Friday, while some of the Pharisees in the crowd tried to stop the praise of the procession that was taking place, on the Sunday before he was put to death on a cross, stretched between two thieves, the Sunday that he said, if these who are praising me hold their peace, then the rocks will cry out, on the Sunday before he sealed our salvation, as he came near the city, the text we just read said, in the midst of the praise, Luke tells us that he wept over the city. He cried for his people who did not know the things that make for peace. He cried for his people because they were blinded by their culture. They were blinded by their condition. They were blinded by their circumstance. They were blinded by their oppression. They were blinded by being in a spot where they desired, deeply desired, revenge. And
and they could not see the things that make for peace. We keep forgetting, and we need to remember. Jerome Ross wrote about it. I keep reminding you of it. Write it down so you don't forget. These people had, in Luke 19, an occupying army living in their country. Jesus, in verse 43, calls them their enemies. Say enemies. Their enemies had all the political power. Remember, they had to send Jesus to a court presided over by the enemy. A provisional governor appointed by their enemies ran the civic and the political affairs of their capital. He had backing him up an occupying army with superior soldiers. They were commandos trained in urban combat and trained to kill on command. Remember, it was soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom. These people were blinded by the culture of war. Do you know what it is like to live under military rule 24/7, 365? These people were blinded by their circumstance of oppression. Their enemies not only had all of the political power with Governor Pontius Pilate. Y'all call him Pontius Pilate. He's Italian. Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate was running the provisional government. Their enemies also had the military power. They not only had political power, they had the military power. It was Roman soldiers who kept Jesus up all night. It was the Italian army who led Jesus out to Calvary on Friday morning. It was the occupying military brigade who forced Simon of Cyrene to carry the cross for Jesus. These people were tired of their oppression. They wanted the enemy up out of their land. Some of them did, some of them did. Not the businessmen, not those in bed with the enemy. Let's be clear. But the average citizen wanted them out, and they also wanted revenge. They wanted their king to get this military monkey off their backs. They wanted a regime change, if you will. And look what they called Jesus. Look at it in verse 38. They called Jesus the king. Look at verse 38. Look at, they call him the king. Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. They want their king. See, their king, they saw God, the Lord, getting ready to do something about their situation. Blinded by the pain of their situation, they could not see the things that make for peace, y'all. So Jesus cried. Let me help you. The military does not make for peace. The military only keeps the lid on for a little while. The military doesn't make for peace. And the absence of armed resistance doesn't mean the presence of genuine peace. Somebody needs to hear me tonight. You're not hearing me. War does not make for peace. We said at the 11 o'clock service, fighting for peace is like raping for virginity. War does not make for peace. War only makes for escalating violence and a mindset to pay the enemy back by any means necessary. When your wife or your children have been crushed by the enemy, when your mother or your father have been mowed down by the military, peace is not on your mind. Paybacks is the only game in town. You just bide your time and you wait for your opportunity, but somebody is going to pay dearly for the permanent damage that has come into your life and wrecked your world as it rocked your world. Military might doesn't make for peace. War does not make for peace. Occupying somebody else's country doesn't make for peace. Killing those who fought to protect their own homes doesn't make for peace. Press conferences claiming victory do not make for peace. Regime change, substituting one tyrant for another tyrant with the biggest tyrant pulling the puppet strings of all the tyrants, that does not make for peace. Colonizing a country does not make for peace. If you don't believe me, look at Haiti, look at Puerto Rico, look at Angola, look at Zimbabwe, look at Kenya, look at Astabor. make for temporary silence. It does not make for peace. These people who wanted a new king were blinded by their circumstances, and it made Jesus cry because they missed the meaning of his ministry. Turn to your neighbor and say, they missed the meaning of his ministry. When Jesus says you did not recognize the time of your visitation from God, down to verse 44, Jesus is saying you did not recognize the time of my ministry. You did not see the meaning of my ministry. You are missing the real things that make for peace. You are confusing external appearances with internal power. You're looking at the man, and you're not looking at the one that the man represents. You are looking at the miracle. That's verse 37. When the deeds of power, they were praising God. Deeds of power. That's the miracle. Sight to the blind. Deeds of power. Hearing to the deaf. Deeds of power. Speech to the mute. Deeds of power. Cleansing of the lepers. Deeds of power. Wholeness to the broken. Deeds of... You are looking at the miracles and missing the meaning behind the miracle. A miracle is just a sign. A sign only points to something or points the way to something. Don't get fixated on the sign and miss completely what the sign is pointing to. The deeds of power point to a God who is greater than any physical limitation, and a God who can overcome any limiting situation. The things that make for peace, only God can give. Y'all looking to the government for that which only God can give. No wonder he wept. He had good cause to cry. These people under oppression were confusing God and government. Say, confusing God and government. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to hang out here homiletically for just a little while, and then I'm going to let you go home. I have got to pause here, however, as a pastor, because a lot of people still confuse, 2,000 years later, they still confuse God with their government. Now, see, we can see clearly the confusion in the mind of a few Muslims. And please notice, I did not say all Muslims. I said a few Muslims who see Allah as condoning killing and killing any and all who don't believe what they believe. They call it jihad. We can see clearly the confusion in their minds, but we cannot see clearly what it is that we do. We call it crusade. When we turn right around and say that our God condones the killing of innocent civilians as a necessary means to an end. We say that God understands collateral damage. We say that God knows how to forgive friendly fire. We say that God will bless the shock and awe as we take over unilaterally another country, calling it a coalition, because we got three guys from Australia going against the United Nations, going against the majority of Christians, Muslims, and Jews throughout the world, making a preemptive strike in the name of God. We cannot see how what we are doing is the same thing Al-Qaeda is doing under a different color flag, calling on the name of a different God to sanction and approve our murder and our mayhem. And let me tell you something. Jesus said something about that too. Oh yes, he did. Jesus said, how can you see the speck in your brother's eye and can't see the log in your own eye? Well, I submit to you that we can't see it, first of all, because we don't see nobody who don't look like us, dress like us, talk like us, worship like us as brother. And Jesus calls them brother. We demonize them, and that makes it all right to kill them because our God is against demons. Then we can't see the speck, most of all, because we equate our government with our God. We confuse government and God. Let me tell you something. We believe in this country, and we teach our children that God sent us to this promised land. He sent us to take this country from the Arawak, the Susquehanna, the Apache, the Comanche, the Cherokee, the Seminole, the Choctaw, the Hopi, and the Arapaho. We confuse government and God. We believe God sanctioned the rape and robbery of an entire continent. We believe God ordained African slavery. We believe God makes Europeans superior to Africans and superior to everybody else too. We confuse God and government. We said in our founding documents, as a government, we hold these truths is given by God, and then we define Africans in those same documents as three-fifths of a person. We believe God approved of African slavery. We believe God approved segregation. We believe God approved apartheid. And the doctrine which says that all men are created more equal than other men, and we're talking about white men. We confuse God and government. We believe God approves of 6% of the people on the face of this earth controlling all of the resources on the face of this earth, while the other 94% live in poverty and squalor, while we give trillions of dollars of track tax breaks to the white rich. We believe God was a founding member of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Look at the lily whiteness of the G7 nation the next time you see a picture, and then tell me if you see anything wrong. And if necessary, to die in Iraq and anywhere else we decide is a part of the axis of evil, while George W. cuts the military benefits so that when those boys and girls come back home, they can be as bad off as some of the Iraqis that we just liberated. We confuse God and government. We do. Or as George W. piously says, as God so leads him. We confusing God and government. We believe it is all right to decimate the Afro-Colombian community by arming the paramilitary with United States tax dollars, our dollars, a hired military whose real job is to protect the oil line owned by United States companies tied to the presidency, which was stolen by the oil interest. Worse, we've got a paranoid group of patriots in power that now, in the interests of homeland stupidity, I mean homeland security, they are taking away the constitutional right of free speech because it's harmful to the interests of national security, and those interests equate God with government. Our money says in says we will kill you under the orders of our commander-in-chief if you dare to believe otherwise. We are still confusing God and government in the year 2003, just like they confuse it in Luke 19. Well, in case you are in that great number, and I understand from the polls that the number has gone up, still confused. If you're in that number of confused folk 2,000 years after Christ, let me share three quick things with you just to help clear up your confusion. Turn to your neighbor and say, now listen, you got to say it right. Say it with attitude and with ebonics. Say he. Sydney, help somebody tonight. Turn on the other side and say Sydney. Government, hit number one. Governments lie. This government lied about their belief that all men were created equal. The truth is they believed all white men were created equal. The truth is they did not believe that even white women were created equal in creation nor in civilization. The government had to pass an amendment to the Constitution to get white women to vote. Then the government had to pass an equal rights amendment to get equal protection under the law for women. The government still thinks a woman has no rights over her own body, and between Uncle Clarence, who sexually harassed Anita Hill, and a closeted Klan court that is a throwback to the 19th century, handpicked by Daddy Bush, Ronald Reagan, Gerald Ford, caught between Clarence and that stacked court, they're about to undo Roe versus Wade. is still lying today. Government's lie. Turn to your neighbor and say, government's lie. Government lie.
Which shall live in hell, sleeps under when the grand scheme plan keeps all these people wondering why we still running in place, frustrated. Pride is mistaken for hate, it's upgraded. I got a little breath left, less suffocated. Point at the epiphanies and call them all drug related. The time I spent with my life on bent, trying to find the friends inside my head. Must have disengaged every phase and stage. But my I'm coming of age. My unofficial autobio will be accompanied with tips on how to smile. Cause I found that when they don't see you frown, they never know that you're a threat and they don't sweat you when you come around. So who's gonna be my next door savior? Step up to your neighbor and do me a favor. Take off the mask, let it all collapse. Empty the pack and watch your wings grow back. They want us to fight, they just wanna get high. Work all day, all night, trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine. They want us to fight, they just wanna get high. Work all day, all night, trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine. Society becomes jealousy. Intimacy becomes intensity. Say it with a smile like it's meant to be. And all of a sudden, boom, American family. And I can tell when you're mad at your past, because you tend to take them turns just a little too fast. I can tell how you push your foot on the gas, that you already knew that you was gonna finish last. Slow it down and take a little time to look up at them clouds with the fake silver lining. Up in a tree knowing damn well you never reach the top, but you don't stop, you keep climbing. Well, okay, it's settled. No more nights in this weed and thorn infested meadow. Uh-oh, from this day forth, only forward I pedal. Get the memo, I'm cutting the strings to pedal. Shuffle the cards and let's argue. Rooted in between the computer games and cartoons. Stop and watch us all get lost between God and a shot of scotch. Let's get fly.
They want us to fight, they just wanna get high. Work all day, all night, trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine. They want us to fight, they just wanna get high. Work all day, all night, trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. Fight you war until I'm finished with mine.
Nelson Mandela, and our CIA helped put him in prison and keep him there for 27 years. The South African government lied on Nelson Mandela. Governments lied. Turn back to your neighbor. Say it again. Governments lied. The government lied about the Tuskegee experiment. They purposely infected African American men with syphilis. Governments lied. The government lied about bombing Cambodia. And Richard Nixon stood in front of the camera. Let me make myself perfectly clear. We are not the government's lie. The government lied about the drugs for arms contra scheme orchestrated by Oliver North. And then they pardoned, the government pardoned all of the perpetrators so they could get better jobs in the government. Government's lie. The government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Government's lie. Connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and a connection between 9-1-1-0-1 and Operation Iraqi Freedom. Governments lied. The government lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq being a threat to the United States peace. And guess what else? If they don't find them some weapons of mass destruction, they're gonna do just like the LAPD. Some weapons of man. tell your neighbor, he's fit to help us. Where governments lie, God does not lie. Read, write it down, Numbers 23:19. It says, God is not man that he should lie. Now that's the King James translation. The New Revised Translation says, repeat it after me so you won't forget it. God is not a human being that he should lie. Say it again. God is not a human being that he should lie. Let's say it together. God is not a human being that he should lie. Where governments lie, God does not lie. That's number one. Number two, governments change. Long before there was a red, white, and blue colonization, the Egyptian government was doing colonization. They colonized half the continent of Africa and colonized parts of the Mediterranean. All colonizers ain't white. Turn to your neighbor and say, oppressors come in all colors. Hello, hello, hello. But where the government of Egypt and Pharaoh ran it, they don't run a thing today. Why? Because governments change. When the Babylonians carried away the people of promise into exile, the Babylonian government was the baddest government around. But when King Nebuchadnezzar went crazy, his government was replaced by the government of King Belshazzar. King Belshazzar held a great big feast, big banquet, defiled the sacred vessels stolen from the temple in Jerusalem, and a hand appeared out of nowhere and started writing on the wall, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson. And Daniel translated the writing for the king and told him, here's what it means, king. You can find this in Daniel 5. Write it down. Mene, God has numbered the days of your government and brought it to an end. Governments change. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales of justice and you're too light to balance the scales. Parson, that's from the verb peres. Your kingdom, your government is divided and given now to the Medes and to the Persians. And the Bible says that night, that same night, King Belshazzar was killed and Darius the Mede took over the government. Governments change, y'all. Darius was replaced later on by another government. And then another 70 years later, King Cyrus said to the people of promise, y'all can go back home. All I'm trying to get you to see is that governments change. Prior to Abraham Lincoln, the government in this country said it was legal to hold Africans in slavery in perpetuity. Perpetuity is one of the University of Chicago words. That means forever. From now on. When Lincoln got in office, the government changed. Prior to the passing of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, the government defined Africans as slaves, as property. Property. People with no rights to be respected by any whites anywhere. The Supreme Court of the government, same court, granddaddy court of the one that stole the 2000 election, Supreme Court said in its Dred Scott decision in the 1850s, no African anywhere in this country has any rights that any white person has to respect at any place, anytime. That was the government's official position, backed up by the Supreme Court, that's the judiciary, backed up by the executive branch, that's the president, backed up by the legislative branch, and enforced by the military of the government. But I stopped by to tell you tonight that governments change. Prior to Harry Truman's government, the military in this country was segregated. But governments change. Prior to the civil rights and equal accommodations laws of the government in this country, there was back segregation by the country, legal discrimination by the government, prohibited blacks from voting by the government. You had to eat in separate places by the government. You had to sit in different places from white folk because the government said so. And you had to be buried in a separate cemetery. It was apartheid American style from the cradle to the grave, all because the government backed it up. But guess what? Governments changed. Under Bill Clinton, we got a messed up welfare to work bill. But under Clinton, blacks had an intelligent friend in the Oval Office. Oh, but governments changed. The election was stolen. We went from an intelligent friend to a dumb Dixiecrat, a rich Republican who has never held a job in his life, is against affirmative action, against education, I guess he is, against health care, against benefits for his own military, and gives tax breaks to the wealthiest contributors to his campaign. Governments change sometimes for the good and sometimes for the bad. But I'm fitting to help you again. Turn back and say, he's fitting to help us again. Where governments change, write this down, Malachi 3:6. Malachi 3:6, thus saith the Lord. Repeat it after me, for I am the Lord, and I change not. That's the King James Version. The New Revised says, for I, the Lord, do not change. In other words, where governments change, God does not change. God is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. That's what his name, I am, means. You know, he does not change. There is no shadow of turning in God. One songwriter puts it this way: as thou hast been, thou forever will be. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord, unto me. God does not change. God was against slavery on yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still against slavery today. God was a God of love yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still a God of love today. God was a God of justice on yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still a God of justice today. Turn to your neighbor and say, God does not change. Where governments lie, God does not lie. Where governments change, God does not change. And I'm through now. But let me leave you with one more thing. Governments fail. The government in this text, comprised of Caesar, Quirinius, Pontius Pilate, Pontius Pilate, the Roman government failed. The British government used to rule from east to west. The British government had a Union Jack. She colonized Kenya, Ghana, Nigeria, Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, and Hong Kong. Her navies ruled the seven seas all the way down to the tip of Argentina in the Falklands. But the British government failed. The Russian government failed. The Japanese government failed. The German government failed. And the United States of America government, when it came to treating her citizens of Indian descent fairly, she failed. She put them on reservations. When it came to treating her citizens of Japanese descent fairly, she failed. She put them in internment prison camps. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters. Put them on auction blocks. Put them in cotton fields. Put them in inferior schools. Put them in substandard housing. Put them in scientific experiments. Put them in the lowest paying jobs. Put them outside the equal protection of the law. Kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating a citizen as less than human. God damn America, as long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme. The United States government has failed the vast majority of her citizens of African descent. Think about this. Think about this. For every one Oprah, a billionaire, you got 5 million blacks who are out of work. For every one Colin Powell, a millionaire, you got 10 million blacks who cannot read. For every one Condoleezza Rice, you got 1 million in prison. For every one Tiger Woods who needs to get beat, golf course. The United States government has failed the vast majority of our citizens of African descent. But I'm fitting to help you one last time. Tell me your name and say, he's fitting to help us one last time. Turn back and say, forgive him for the goddamn. That's in the Bible, Lord. Blessings and curses is in the Bible. It's in the Bible. But I'm fitting to help you one last time. Let me tell you something. Where governments fail, God never fails. When God says it, it's done. God never fails. When God wills it, you better get out the way. Because God never fails. When God fixes it, oh, believe me, it's fixed. God never fails. Somebody right now, you think you can make it. But I want you to know that you are more than a conqueror through Christ. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. When the Savior that was sent by God was put to death on a Friday afternoon, it looked like God failed. But early on Sunday morning, the angels in heaven were singing, God never fails. You can't put down what God raises up. God never fails. You can't keep down what God wants up. God never fails. If God can get a three-day Jesus up out of a grave, what's going on in your life that in any way can match what God has already done? He abides with you. He'll reside in you. And he'll preside over your problems if you take them to him and leave them with him. Don't take them back. Turn your neighbor and say, stop taking your problems back. See, we always bring our problems to the altar and then we take them right on back to our seat. Turn back and say, stop taking them back.
White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And the Democrats are throwing the election away. For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman that was running for president. I'm no second-class citizen. And goddamn the Democrats.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The anti-colonial cure for mental slavery.